Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masterson. Today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a landmark passage today in the UN General Assembly of the Arms Trade Treaty, the first international treaty regulating the multi-billion dollar global arms trade. Louis Bellinger, the spokesperson for ControlArms.org, a coalition of activists who campaigned for a bulletproof treaty, joins us to discuss the treaty that Syria, Iran, and North Korea tried to block and how it will be implemented. Then we will speak with public health lawyer Michelle Simon, the president of Eat Drink Politics, about what is derisively being referred to as the Monsanto Protection Act, a rider inserted by Monsanto's lobbyists in the recent must-pass continuing resolution that requires the Department of Agriculture to ignore any court ruling that would halt the planting of genetically engineered crops. We will discuss how the Senate and the President folded and Michelle Simon's article at Food Safety News, Monsanto teams up with Congress to shred the Constitution. Then finally, we will speak with Damon Moglend, the Climate and Energy Program Director at Friends of the Earth, about the rivers of oil flowing through the streets of the town of Mayflower, Arkansas. We will discuss the impact of the spill of thousands of barrels of heavy Canadian tar sands crude oil from an Exxon pipeline built in the 1940s, and how this will affect the national debate on the Keystone XL pipeline that will carry the same oil across the U.S. from Canada to Texas. And joining us now is Louis Bellinger, who is the spokesperson for ControlArms.org, a coalition of activists who have campaigned for a bulletproof UN arms trade treaty. He's also the spokesperson for Oxfam International and was Oxfam International spokesperson in Washington, D.C. and Brussels for the last 4 years. Previously, he worked for the International Trade Union Confederation and for the World Wildlife Federation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Louis Bellinger.
Thank you very much.
And I take it you're celebrating, and I don't want to keep you for too long because you've been working very hard to get the United Nations to pass this treaty on the arms trade treaty, and it's not been without some setbacks. A few days ago, Syria, Iran, and North Korea blocked the treaty by consensus, but it passed today 154 votes to 3 with 23 abstentions. So I take it you're feeling good.
Yes, we're feeling great. This was a good day. You know, there's a lot of bashing on the United Nations in terms of the type of organization and the type of efficiency that we've been seeing in the last years or so. But today was a good day. I think today governments, with the help of the Control Arms Coalition and all the campaigners who have campaigned for this arms trade treaty, I think we made the world a safer place today, and we can be proud of what was done. And there was quite a lot of emotion in the room. And like you said, we had quite a few setbacks over the years. And just last Thursday, those three countries just blocked the consensus. And today it was just a tsunami of support. The majority sent a clear message to the world that they want more regulation between countries. They want weapons to be put under tight control. And I want to emphasize that this is about the transfer, the international transfer of weapons and ammunition between countries. It has nothing to do with domestic ownership. It has nothing to do with right here in the United States or elsewhere. It has to do with international transfers between countries. So, yes, today is a good day, and I think we can be proud of ourselves.
And these international transfers of arms between countries are a trade worth $70 billion annually. That's not small change.
Yes, no, it's a huge business. And, you know, just for your listeners to understand, there is currently no international treaty that regulates the arms trade. What does that mean? It means, well, we have treaties that regulate clothes, that regulates meat, that regulates flat-screen TVs and iPod, but there's no international treaty between countries on how to say to countries, this is how you should behave on the international scene. This is, you know, these are the rules when you trade dangerous AK-47, M-16, round of ammunition, tanks, attack helicopter. These are the rules by which you should behave under. And right now we have this rule. We have this international norm that will say to the country, you can no longer act with impunity. You can no longer do whatever you want to do and sell weapons left and right to dictators and arms dealers. You have to respect certain rules.
And we're talking about the kind of arms that this new treaty covers are battle tanks, armored combat vehicles, large caliber artillery systems, combat aircraft, attack helicopters, warships, missiles and missile launchers, small arms and light weapons. And ammunition, is that also covered?
Yes, it is covered.
And what is the trade in ammunition? It's extraordinary, isn't it, how many bullets are sold per year?
Yes, I mean, there are two bullets produced every year per person on this planet. Over 12 billion bullets are being produced and sold every single year, enough to kill everyone on the planet twice. So, you know, when we say we need regulation, we need to know where these millions of rounds of ammunition are going and who is using them. I think it's an understatement. So, you know, you said today, are you celebrating? How are you feeling? For me, I personally, you know, and I think everyone in Oxfam and in the Control Arms Coalition shares that views. Today is not really about us. Today is about the millions of victims of armed violence and the innocent victims of the unregulated trade who have lost their lives, who have, you know, been injured by armed violence. And we had quite a few here, people who have lost. We had a colleague from Scotland who had lost his son on a holiday in Turkey because of the illegal trade in weapons. We had a colleague from Guatemala who was on a wheelchair because of that. So, you know, this is very real for us. And for me, my heart goes out to all these people who have suffered from armed violence.
So, again, I'm speaking with Louis Bélanger, who is the spokesperson for ControlArms.org, a coalition of activists who have campaigned for a bulletproof UN arms trade treaty, which was just passed today. He's also the spokesperson for Oxfam International. Now, the hiccups last Thursday, the Syria and Iran and North Korea tried to block the treaty. So you didn't get it by consensus. It was a vote, and there were 23 abstentions led by Russia and China, Cuba, Venezuela, Bolivia, Nicaragua, etc., all abstained. Give me a sense then, even though it was passed by a substantial majority, 154-3 with 23 abstentions, what is the enforcement mechanism? Is this a moral enforcement mechanism, or is there an actual teeth in this treaty?
Yeah, these are good questions. Basically, just to come back on what happened last Thursday, where we wanted the treaty, well, the chair wanted the treaty to be adopted under consensus. Consensus means everyone has to agree. So you had 190 countries which were fine with the treaty as it was to go ahead, and there were three countries, and you named them, Syria, Iran, and North Korea, who blocked this treaty for everybody else. So they pushed the treaty to today, and today we had a treaty and to be voted under simple majority. We needed 97. We got 155. It has changed because Angola, a small country in Africa, changed their vote. They said they made a mistake. So it's 155 countries in favor. So what does that mean? To answer your question, you know, how will this treaty be implemented? First, people need to sign it. Countries need to go and sign the treaty and agree to it. Second, they need to ratify it by their Congress, Parliament, whatever works out, you know, whatever institution they have back home. Once 50 countries have ratified the treaty, 10 days later, it comes into place. But what's, you know, important to remember is that today sends a clear message. Today sends a message that you can no longer act in complete impunity. There is an international treaty that 155 countries have voted yes on, and this becomes international law. And, you know, I think in the last couple of months, you've heard Russia saying, well, you know, we're not breaking the law. We're providing weapons to Syria. We're providing weapons to a regime which we believe respect human rights. And we're not breaking any law, so we're going to keep on going. Well, right now, they are breaking the law.
And does that mean then that Russia is going to be answerable, literally, starting today?
Well, you know, if I mean, I've said that a few times to some of your colleagues. Like, if a country wants to keep on selling weapons for the next 25 years to North Korea and Iran, they can do that. I mean, nothing stops them, but there's a cost and there's a price at the international level for doing that. The same way there's a cost if someone doesn't join a certain treaty, for example, the Kyoto, protocol, or if there's a cost if someone doesn't sign the landmine treaty and keeps on producing landmines and selling them all over the world. But, you know, there's a price for this. So, mm-hmm. You know, the point of what your listeners should understand is that, you know, if you keep on breaking this treaty, well, first of all, people will stop selling weapons to you, and there is a price at the international level that you will pay. So, you know, we believe that in the long term, this will reduce armed violence. This will reduce the number of people that are killed because of the irresponsible arms trade, and we believe it will make a difference.
And Louis Bellinger, it seems like your organization, ControlArms.org, the coalition of activists who campaign for this bulletproof UN arms trade treaty that was just passed today, some of your tactics were quite imaginative. It seems that it did get the attention of the UN delegations. You had a mock-up of an attack helicopter on a roof opposite the UN, and then the choirs were singing to the representatives of the General Assembly of the United Nations as they went in, and also you were handing out cookies shaped like bullets. So give us a sense of the theater.
What theater? You know, I mean, it's great. I'm glad you're asking this. I mean, our role as activists is just to keep telling delegates, we're watching you. You know, you're not just in a room at the UN somewhere lost in Midtown West in Manhattan, you know, Midtown East, Manhattan. We're watching you, and delegation, coalition, and campaigners, excuse me, from all over the world are watching you. And, you know, this is what we did. We try to get a bit of media attention to it. We try to get delegates to be reminded every day that they were being, that we supported them as well, because there's a lot of that, you know, there was a lot of opposition and it was a difficult treaty to negotiate. So, you know, you mentioned the choir. We had a nice choir from Harlem that, you know, welcomed the delegates and singing a couple of songs by Elvis and whatnot. And it just put a smile on their face. It gives them energy. And today was a culmination of that. And you know, you had to be there to believe it. And I saw African delegates, you know, tearing up, because this will make a difference, in Africa. This will be a treaty that saves lives. And, you know, there was a lot of emotion in the room. And, it was a great 2 weeks.
Well, apparently, already here in the United States, the National Rifle Association, the largest pro-gun lobby here in the United States, who incidentally today released a report on arguing that they should have armed guards at schools in this country, they have said that they would fight the implementation of this treaty in the Senate. And the Secretary of State, John Kerry, has also described this treaty as strong, effective, and implementable. So what's your understanding of the next step here in terms of the United States ratifying the treaty? I mean, there's no question that the White House will sign it, but will the Senate pass it?
Yeah, so I think there's a campaign in the U.S. that needs to start now. But one, you know, to make sure that the president signed the treaty and support it. And second, I think from both the civil society side, so both for campaigners, but also from the administration and Democrats and everybody else that support a treaty, to make things clear, you know, to give a clear picture to the American public, to say this is a treaty about international transfers of weapons. It has absolutely nothing to do with domestic ownership. You know, there's not like a UN inspector that's going to go and inspect how weapons are being bought in the States and how American citizens are behaving with those guns. You know, it's not going to happen. This is not what the treaty is about. The treaty is about the transfer from the United States of America to another country, or from Canada to another country. This is what the treaty is about. So, you know, I mean, the NRA can say all they want that this, infringed the Second Amendment rights of Americans, but it's just not true. It's just lies. And if the NRA wants to continue to side. Look who blocked the treaty. The three countries that blocked the treaty that was against having more regulation on the arms trade was Syria, the Republic of Iran, and North Korea. So the NRA can side with those three countries all they want. You know, they know they're telling lies.
Well, but on the other hand, the countries that make the weapons, not sell the weapons, or refuse to sign the treaty, which you just mentioned, the three outliers, Syria, Iran, and North Korea. But in terms of the top 10 arms suppliers in the world, this is figures from 2012, the United States is the top arms supplier in the world with $8.8 billion in trade. Russia's second with $8 billion. China's third with $1.8 billion. Ukraine is fourth with $1.3 billion. Germany fifth with $1.2 billion. France sixth with $1.1 billion. UK seventh with $0.9 billion. And then Italy with $0.8 billion. And Netherlands with 7.7 billion and Spain with 0.7. So Russia abstained and China abstained, but most of the arms producers on this list, the top 10 arms producers, signed the treaty. So are they really prepared to lose the business?
Well, it's not about losing the business. This is actually a very good question, because people say, you know, what is in for the United States or France or the UK or Germany to sell weapons? I mean, it's not in their interest right now to sell weapons to Iran, to Syria, or to any government that we know are going to go ahead and infringe human rights. I mean, I don't think that it's in any of those countries' interest. And the majority of countries, and even, you know, sort of the most skeptics of countries, want more regulation. You know, there's a real clear need for the world to be under tighter regulation. Now, you know, if Russia and China do not come through, I don't think it means that the U.S. is losing business. It means that that's the decision of China and Russia, but, you know, they will have they still will need to act accordingly. They still, you know, their behavior will be followed. Because we now have a norm, and this is what the treaty, and I think that's what your listeners need to understand. What do treaty do? You know, what does a treaty do? A treaty establishes an international norm on how you should behave. I want to sell weapons to you. Well, there should be some rules. There should be some rules to ensure that you're not going to use them against your own people. There should be some rules to make sure that you're not going to go and violate international humanitarian law and do all kinds of nonsense. So, you know, that's what it does. And we're confident if we have many countries that will sign on to the treaty, that will ratify it, that will come into force in, you know, within the next 5 years, that it will make a difference. And, you know, all ducks in a row, people will fall in line. And I gave the example earlier to the landmine treaty where the United States did not sign, did not ratify, did not support the landmine treaty. And look what happened. They've stopped producing them, they've stopped selling them, and the last decade, you haven't seen a landmine in the market because, you know, it establishes a norm, it establishes sort of some sort of authority, and that's what we're looking for to do with the arms trade treaty.
Well, you mentioned, Louis Bélanger, Russia from now on, because this treaty has been passed the United Nations, if it sells arms to Syria, it's in violation of the treaty, even though the Russians abstained from the vote. What about those that want to sell arms or even give arms to the Syrian rebels? How are they covered by this treaty?
Well, if you want to sell weapons tomorrow to the Syrian rebel, you would need to make the same assessment. You know, this treaty applies to non-state actor as well as governments. So if tomorrow France or Italy or the U.S. want to sell weapons to the rebel, they need to make sure that these, you know, the weapons will not fall in the wrong hands. So I think anybody that will make an assessment today to say, can I guarantee that the weapons that I sell to the rebels will not be used to violate human rights or international humanitarian law or sort of a list of things, of criteria that you need to go through that's in the treaty today, anybody that make that assessment on the risk will come to the conclusion that, yes, there is a risk, and we believe should not go ahead with the transfer.
Well, just in closing, Louis Bélanger, you, of course, the spokesperson for the ControlArms.org, which is the coalition of activists, but within the coalition, you're also the spokesperson for Oxfam International and also Amnesty International were involved in the coalition and pushing the treaty. So these are the humanitarian groups that normally feed people. So what's the connection between the humanitarian groups that are trying to save lives from disease and famine and getting involved in this arms trade treaty?
It's a great question. And the answer is conflict is one of the main drivers of poverty. And, you know, I've traveled in several places and especially in Africa, and you could tell the impact and the negative impact that the unregulated arms trade is having in Africa. I was in Goma in the Democratic Republic of Congo just a month ago, and you see the impact that weapons is having on the lives of people. You see that people cannot lift themselves out of poverty because they are always stuck in conflict, because they flee violence and they are under constant threat of attack, and this cannot go on. So, you know, why is Oxfam, a development and humanitarian NGO, working in arms trade? And the simple answer is because conflict is one of the main drivers of poverty, and we believe that if there's less violence, if there's less weapons, if there's less ammunition that are fueling these conflict, you know, people can move forward, that we can make Africa and other places in the world a little safer and a little you know, better and ready for serious development. So that's why Oxfam has been working so hard in the last decade to reach this arms trade treaty.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Louis Bélanger.
Thank you for your interest.
Again, I've been speaking with Louis Bélanger, who is the spokesperson for ControlArms.org, a coalition of activists who have campaigned for a bulletproof UN arms trade treaty that was just passed today. He's also the spokesperson for Oxfam International, and he has previously worked for the International Trade Union Confederation and the World Wildlife Federation. And we're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about how the White House and the Senate caved for what's being called the Monsanto Protection Act.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs. You that hide behind walls. You that hide behind discs. I just don't want...